Hi, this is Derek Sherinian. You're listening to my record, The Phoenix, on Sonic Perspectives.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another interview of Sonic Perspectives. I'm here in Toronto wearing my very comfortable socks of Apollo, and on the phone with me is the keyboard extraordinaire, Derek Sherinian. Derek, it's great to have you with us again.
Thank you for having me, Rodrigo. Always a pleasure.
Yeah, let's talk about the new album, The Phoenix, which comes out on September 18th. What was the writing and recording process like this time?
Simon and I got together probably three or four times, and we were just comparing ideas that we had, and we just picked the best stuff and started developing it. The first batch that I brought to him was the title track, The Phoenix, Empyrean Sky, Helios, and also Dragonfly. And to me, Dragonfly is very special. It's the first song that I ever played acoustic piano all the way through with no synthesizers or guitar. It's just piano. And it took me in a new direction musically. Simon does a lot of touring with jazz pianist Hiromi, who is amazing pianist. And so he's really experienced to doing the piano trio. So he took my initial idea that you hear on the intro and really developed it into something that I never expected. And so the result of it just turned out amazing. And we have a video of when we recorded it that's really going to be great when people see it.
Nice. I think the chemistry between you and Simon is palpable. I mean, some might say it's better than ever because you feed off each other like no other pair I've seen in music these days.
It's great. We've already started writing, not to reveal anything, but we've already started writing the next record. We're already sending ideas and we're inspired. And I think Simon has said it before that I bring out a youthful enthusiasm in him in the writing, the process. And it's great. And to me, that youthful enthusiasm is the most important thing. And there's nothing different in my spirit from when I was 16 to how it is now at 53. The only difference is the music that I used to listen to, like Michael Schenker, Steve Vai, Billy Sheehan, Simon, all of those guys. Mm. Now I'm making records with them and writing songs with them or for them and producing them. So I'm really living the dream. And it's fucking awesome. I love it. I love waking up every day, go swim in my pool, and then go fire up the studio and, you know, see what comes out of my hands or finish up a record. Or I'm doing sessions for people all over the world. Like I just did a session last year, two records for Whitesnake, and I did a track for Michael Schenker last week, which turned out amazing. And he and I now have a great relationship. He's going to play on my next record.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So it's really good stuff. I mean, everywhere. And I'm doing sessions for people all over the world. Send me their music, different styles. Like the other day I did a session for someone in Finland, one in Scotland, and one from Waco, Texas, all in the same day.
That's crazy.
What's amazing with the technology is that you can live anywhere in the world. And if there's a musician that you love their style and you want them to play on your recording, you can approach them and work it out. So I'd say that to anyone that's listening to this that is recording. If you want me to play on your stuff, hit me up, man. Let's talk. I want to hear what you're doing.
All right.
Yeah.
And it's your first solo album since Oceana from 2011. And I know you were involved in Sons of Apollo and many other things through the years, but what took you so long between solo albums?
A couple things. It was disheartening when Napster or all the downloading of the records, and basically, in a nutshell, that no matter who I had on my record or how great it was, everyone was downloading it for free. And so then when it came time to get the next record advance, the company would say, you know what, your record is great, but it sold less than the other one, and we can only pay you according. And so the advances dwindled to a point where it was so low that it just didn't make sense. So I took a time out and stopped making solo records for a while. And in 2016, Mike and I put together Sons of Apollo. And so I've been focusing all my creative energy into that, pretty much those, the first two Sons of Apollo records. But then I felt an urge to fire up the solo engine again. So I got a new solo deal and called Simon, and we just got to work right away, and about a year ago, and here we are now, you know?
Yeah. And as usual in your albums, you have a team of amazing players with you, like Billy Sheehan this time, Steve Vai, Joe Bonamassa. What was the rationale in picking all those guys this time?
Basically, the common thread throughout the album is Simon and I. He's on every song, I'm on every song. He's co-producing, mixing. We're both immersed in this whole thing. And Simon co-wrote most of the tracks with me. So that's a real common thread that's going to be there. And the reason why I love Simon Phillips is that in 1980, I had two records that were my favorite of that year, besides Van Halen, Women and Children First. Jeff Beck, There and Back, and also Michael Schenker's first record, MSG1. And what was amazing about it was that Simon was the drummer on both of those records. One was totally heavy metal and one was jazz fusion, but Simon equally kicked ass on both of them, and you could feel his style no matter what genre he was playing. And that to me, even though he was a drummer, had such an impact on me that between Eddie Van Halen, his signature style of hearing that in 1978, and then hearing Simon Phillips' drums, that level of excellence, I wanted to have that in my keyboard playing, that same type of ability, so I can be the chameleon, whether I'm playing in Dream Theater or whether I can go play blues in Joe Bonamassa, or go play new wave with Billy Idol, or classic rock with Black Country Communion. I can go play with the best of the best and still maintain my style. And it's all from that realization like 40 years ago of the importance of that.
That's a great analogy. And speaking of Simon, I did an interview with him that lasted, I don't know, 45 minutes. We didn't even touch half of his career. Like, he did stuff with Judas Priest as well, and so many other albums.
Just amazing career. Simon is awesome. I'm very blessed to work with him, and we just have a great chemistry, and I look forward to doing a lot more with him in the future.
Good stuff. And speaking of the Phoenix again, I like how you again did a dairy-free album with no cheesy apps allowed, right?
It's very organic. I love how you're trying to bait me in. I ain't going to take the bait. So, the B3 was the primary instrument on this record, my Nord Lead 3, and then also Memory Moog, the acoustic piano, obviously, and Fender Rhodes and Wurlitzer. I kept it very vintage. I think there's certain sounds that are timeless that are going to sound great 60 years ago. They'll sound great today, and they'll sound great 60 years from now. That my B3, or actually it's a 1959 Hammond C3, Big Red, that I used on this record. I mean, that thing was from 1960. So imagine how many different records that organ has been on, or churches, or whoever had it before me. Mm-hmm. There's a soul to that instrument, and it just sounds fat. And when you play with, even live in situations, like if you're playing with guys like Zach, their sound is so massive and heavy. It's like playing with Thor or Loki. When you hear how loud it is coming up through those Marshalls, you need a keyboard sound that's going to keep up and support and enhance what he's doing. You play something that's from a cheese wheel coming out, it's going to get swallowed up and it's not going to read out. So you really need to have those powerful overtones and that Hammond sound when you're playing hard rock.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And did you have a song in mind for each of the guests before you made the invitation, or did they contribute? How was the contribution of the guests this time?
Well, half and half. I knew with Joe that he was going to sing, and so we picked them changes because I played with Buddy. Joe loves Hendrix, and we just thought it would be a good song, which worked out amazingly. And then Kiko and I wrote a song together, so I knew that that was going to be on the record, and I wanted to really give him a chance to shine. He does an acoustic bit in the middle of Pesadelo that's amazing and really adds to the record, and it's just him and a little bit of light Simon percussion behind him, but I wanted to give him the spotlight to do whatever he wanted.
Okay. And I like how the album kicks off with the keyboard lead that was taken from the Eddie Van Halen playbook. For me, that's a hell of a way to start an album, right?
It is. It's like a big middle finger to everyone. And I wanted to come out with a bang and to just really display my style front and center, naked, put it right there, and then have Simon kick in with the drums, keep soloing, and then all the surprises take it from there.
Yeah. And the first single, Empyrean Sky, has already been revealed to the public and has a little bit of everything in your style, jazz, fusion, a heavy riff. Tell me about this one. And was it different to work with Bumblefoot in the context of your solo album versus Sons of Apollo or not?
Maybe a little bit different because in Sons of Apollo, you know, Bumblefoot's writing his own parts and it's more of a collaborative thing. These songs were already written by Simon and I, so we gave him the composition, but he had a lot of freedom, of course, in his solos and his guitar parts. And I'll tell you what, never stops surprising me how good he is and his ability to be a chameleon and also put his style in there. And Simon was super impressed with Bumblefoot. And I wouldn't be surprised if the three of us were ever to go do something live. Like if I was to ever take this out live with Simon on drums, which is a dream of mine, I could see Bumblefoot playing guitar. Because like, really think about it. How many guys on the planet are there that could cover all the different styles?
Oh, yeah. That would be one of my questions to you down the track about if you were ever going down the road playing your solo stuff, who could emulate, I don't know, Zakk Wylde, all these
you
guys.
Could. That's the thing is that I have all of these sounds are so deep in my head when I'm composing. If I'm writing something super heavy, I always hear Zach's guitar. If I'm doing something slow and on the bass, I always hear the fretless Tony Franklin bass, or blues, I always hear Joe's guitar. You know, these sounds and level of playing are just ingrained in my head. I can't hear anything less than that, you know?
Yeah.
And so...
Yeah, I'm sure Bumblefoot could put his own twist to a lot of the material that you have. Alan Holdsworth, guys, right? Yeah.
It's amazing. Bumblefoot could really cover everything, you know? I would also... In the past, I've said Steve Lukather would be a dream to go out with, he and Simon. But then again, some of the more gnarly stuff.
Yeah.
You know, Bumblefoot takes it into a new level of ability. There's very few guys that could do it. I mean, John Petrucci has that ability to play any style and pull it off. Bumblefoot, McAlpine, you know, there's another one. Very few guys on the planet that could do it.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of my favorite songs in this release is Clouds of Ganymede with Steve Vai. I know you played with him in the Generation X tour, and that's when you guys decided to work together, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that song is amazing. The way you feed off each other towards the end. Oh, my God.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. I love Steve, and he's been a hero of mine. He and Billy Sheehan, I remember the Eat 'Em and Smile record, 86. So I was 20 years old, and those guys were huge heroes of mine because they were of that same ilk of being able to rock, but they were virtuosos at the same time. And here they were playing together in Roth's band, and they were doing these crazy solo spots. And, you know, they were bona fide musical heroes to me. And what's so cool is being able to like work with Billy. Here I am in a band with him and with Steve, getting phone calls. Like one morning I just got done swimming and I'm having my coffee by the pool. The phone rings and it's, I go, hello. And he goes, Derek, it's Yngwie J. I go, oh, what's up, man? What's up, Yngwie? And he's all, I want you to do this Generation X tour. I go, well, okay, let me think about it. Let's talk about it. And then I hang up. And then 2 minutes later, it's Vi calling. And I'm going, whoa, this is cool. I'm just sitting here and I got Vi and Yngwie calling me within 5 minutes of each other, asking me to do this tour. And so that's great. How the relationship with Vi really developed. And when I asked him to do this, he gladly accepted and did an amazing job. You can hear he just didn't play a solo and phone it in. He really took his time and did his overdubs and harmonizing and put a lot of love and attention to detail. And I'm very grateful for that. And he's invited to play on my records anytime.
Nice. And I'm curious about the title of this track, because Ganymede was a controversial Greek god. There's always that Greek influence in the title.
Well, it was named Simon actually came with that title. We were really struggling to find one, and we came to the deadline, and then Simon came up with I had clouds of something, then Simon came up with Ganymede, and
okay
At first, I go, I don't know if I like that word. And he goes, it's the biggest moon of Jupiter. It's the mightiest moon. And so that was the significance. All right, let's go with Ganymede. But now I'm used to it. I like it.
Nice, nice.
What did the god? What was the story on the god?
Well, he's a controversial type of god.
I'll look it up. That's interesting now. That gives a good backstory now.
Yeah, yeah.
I hope it's a good story.
We'll check it out. More on that later.
Cool.
Probably the most unusual track on the album for me is Dragonfly, which we spoke about before, but it has a style that wouldn't sound out of place on a Protocol album, right?
Well, that's a compliment because that is so far out of the normal for me. And yeah, I'm still trying to come down from the ether from playing that song. It is so out of my normal wheelhouse. But I started during the last Sons of Apollo record. I have a long 9-minute solo spot that I do live. And in the middle of it, after the whole Figaro's horror improvisation on the B3, the middle part of the solo, I go to the front on a piano, a weighted action piano, and I start playing Dragonfly just out of nowhere. I just start playing and people are listening, go, what is that? Blah, 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 blah. But I was foreshadowing the song and I just wanted to feed it to the people, just give them a little taste. And then when it comes out, they might go, ah, that's what he was playing when they look back at YouTube.
Nice. Yeah, I mean, judging by that track, if you are needed for a Protocol tour, you could join the next day.
Oh God. It was, I'll be honest with you. It's for me to play up to that level of technique. It took a lot of work and I'm not going to lie about it. And it was very rewarding to be able to do it. And to do a Protocol tour and to be able to play that style and play it fluidly as Simon deserves to hear it, it would be a little bit of a stretch for me. I would have to take a lot of time to get to that level. I'll just tell you honestly.
Take some work.
Yeah. Always work. There's always room for growth.
Yeah. And the only song with vocals this time is a bold choice, but also one which is linked to your past, Them Changes by Buddy Miles with Joe on guitar and vocals.
Yes.
Yeah. So tell us about that one. I think, Joe must go crazy with all the stories about Jimi Hendrix and Buddy Miles and everything, right?
You know, he loves... What was great is Joe always is a good friend of mine, and we really have a strong musical relationship, especially from Black Country Communion. But I also played in his solo band for a couple of years. And so I really got exposed to great blues playing. And so when it came time for him to play on this record, I really wanted him to sing. It would have been a waste to just have him play guitar and not sing. So we chose Them Changes because of my history with Buddy. He loves Hendrix and he just really nailed it in the studio. You could hear that solo he played was his second take solo, and we have it all on film, and we have a great video that's going to come out when the single comes out in September that captures his brilliance. It's really something to see.
Oh, nice. So that's going to be a single? Is that going to be a video with just a song, or are you guys recording in the studio? What's it going
to
be like?
There's going to be a full-length video to go along with the single release. And then also we have an interview. It's like a 4-minute making of Them Changes behind the scenes, which is really cool too.
Oh, good. And Octopus Pedigree is another song with the leads that could just as well fit in the Sons of Apollo track, right?
Maybe. I mean, Ron and I both have definite styles. And so there you go. Yeah.
Yeah. I think you used that term to express what Sons of Apollo represents to you as well, right? Is there any connection
Octopus
here?
Octopus Pedigree. Well, that's Eric Singer made that up because when we were doing the press for the first record, Eric goes, you guys, you should just be obnoxious. And he goes, Octopus Pedigree. He goes, that's funny. He goes, it isn't just Pedigree. He goes, there's so many bands that you guys have played with. It's arms coming from all directions. And so it was just an obnoxious, fun phrase that was an inside joke amongst us. And so when it came time to title these songs, Eric Singer goes, you should name a song Octopus Pedigree. I go, you know what? Let's do it. Fuck it. I think that's funny. And I think it works perfectly. But what's great is Simon goes, when I sent him the email saying this song now is called Octopus Pedigree, he goes, Derek, what is Octopus Pedigree? his accent. It was really funny.
Good stuff. And Pesadelo is the album closer, and it shows something very fresh in your career, I think. It's a flamenco vibe mixed with heavy riffs and a kind of unsettling feeling here and there, right?
Yeah, there's some, that's a good way to describe it. There's anxiety, it's powerful, but then there's just a weird, cool vibe to it. And I really love the way it turned out. Kiko's a badass player, and I would work with him again anytime.
And I love that you named the song with a Portuguese title. And I mean, for me as a Brazilian, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought it would be cool. I mean, because Kiko is so featured in it. And I thought that would be a cool a tip of the hat to him and his country.
Yeah. And I mean, for us, for any Brazilian who likes metal and rock, he sees Kiko as a god, man. So thank you for putting him there.
You got it. Well, I hope that a lot of Kiko's fans will come listen to the Phoenix and then become my fans also.
Yeah. That's the hope. I think it's going to happen. There's definitely some common elements there between the two of you, for sure. Yeah. Tell me about Sons of Apollo. I mean, you guys were in the middle of a tour when the whole world shut down due to the pandemic. I saw that a few dates are already being rescheduled for next year. But in the meantime, did you guys write anything, or are you guys still in touch? Or
I mean, Ron and I are always writing. I mean, every day, whether we're writing for Sons of Apollo or solo stuff or whatever it is. So, I mean, I'm not sure what everyone else is doing.
Okay. I hope you guys get back on the road soon and that you're able to include Resurrection Day on the set list, because when you guys play here in Toronto, it didn't make the cut.
Yeah. Well, let's hope first and foremost, let's hope that all of these rescheduled European dates and the South American dates that are scheduled for April and May 2021. I mean, everything is on the books. So fingers crossed that we get to do these dates and come out and play for everybody. You know?
Yeah.
We just want everyone to be safe and healthy and first and foremost, but we're ready to come back out and play.
Absolutely. And you added another entry on your already impressive resume by re-recording a few things for Whitesnake recently.
Yes.
I think it was Slip of the Tongue, right? Tell me about
also,
that.
And also Restless Heart, which was a Whitesnake release that was only released in Europe, not the US, but it's part of the Whitesnake catalog.
Oh, okay. What was it like to work with David Coverdale? Were you guys together in the studio? Did he give you any indication of what we wanted? Or
no, I've never met David in person, only online and on the phone. And he's a very nice man, very, very charming David Coverdale. He's awesome. And so, he called me up and he basically, he knows my playing through Black Country Communion, because obviously he and Glenn are friends. And I'm sure Glenn has said nice stuff to Coverdale about me. So David approached me to do these records. And the first one I did was maybe 4 years ago, The Restless Heart. And he had keyboards already recorded on this record. And so he basically scraped all of those keyboards and had me replace everything. And it's 90% Hammond organ. And there's like Wurlitzer piano on one thing, total old school blues.
Uh-huh.
And it worked out great. He loved it. And what he said to me is, he goes, you sound like John Lord. When I hear you're playing, it reminds me of that soulful, ballsy feeling. And so we've always, you know, stayed in touch and, you know, I've sent texts back and forth. But then last year, he asked me to re-record all the keyboards on Slip of the Tongue, the record with Steve Vai. Mm-hmm. And so that was really, really cool. And he goes, just do your thing and give me that B3, man. And so I dug in. And if you listen to that record now, it sounds like all the cheese keys that were on there before. I'm not sure who played. You can dig back and find out for yourself if you want. Uh-huh. But now it sounds like fucking John Lord playing with Whitesnake. And then, but with the John Paul Jones Mellotrons and the killer No Quarter Roads, all the favorite keyboard sounds that we've heard in classic rock all in one, I put on this Whitesnake record and it sounds great. And he's releasing three albums that are compilations. I think one is the rock album, one is the blues album, and one is ballads. And all of these albums, I'm going to be on all three of them because he's taking songs from each of these albums and allocating them.
Oh, wow.
Accordingly.
Funny enough, Glenn Hughes actually did some backing vocals on Slip of the Tongue. So they another record with you and Glenn together.
No, it's very cool. I love Glenn.
Yeah. Speaking of other bands, I saw a post on your page the other day about Planet X. And I spoke with Virgil in January. He said he'd be up for a reunion if he could clear his schedule. Are there any talks right now about reuniting at this point, or?
Virgil and I are going to speak within the next couple of days. And so let's put it this way.
Okay.
I think it's time to do something. And I want to do it only if he wants to do it. You know, if he's enthusiastic about it, let's make the time to do it. Fuck, what else are we doing? Nobody's touring. You know, if you're making a record, finish up what you're doing, but let's schedule a 6 week or 2 month period and let's put together a fucking record. You know, people want to hear it. And what's really amazing about this band is there's young musicians that weren't even born when we put out the Universe album. That are fans of Planet X only from seeing it on YouTube or bootlegs or whatever. And they never got to see the band live. They can't go buy the old catalog because it's out of print, you know? So
yeah,
I would love it. If Virgil's up for it, man, I'm up for it. I would love to do a record and call Tony up and then figure out who the bass player would be and make a killer record. I would want Simon to mix it, just like Moon Babies. I thought that was the best sounding record.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think from speaking with Virgil, he would be up for it in his own words, but he has to be in that certain mindset because the material is so crazy, so complex, even for him.
It is for me too. Like, look, I'm not excited about having to, like, if we had to go do a tour, having to go back and learn all that shit again. I mean, that's not very exciting. I'd rather go get a molar extracted than to have to fucking learn that stuff up to speed. I mean, it's a production.
Yeah.
But it's worth it in the end, but it's no, you know, walk in the park. I'm not reading charts on stage, you know, so I have to memorize this.
Right. You know? It makes sense. I understand. Yeah, but I mean, fans would like to hear it. I'd love to have to hear it. I've never seen you guys live, so it'd be a dream for me, man.
Well, let's hope, you know, let's hope everything normalizes and everyone could go back and tour. But first step is let's see what happens.
Yeah, absolutely. So last question for me is about your session work. You mentioned that you played with guys from all over the world, but I think with that approach, you end up playing on dozens of albums per year, right? So how can the bands get in touch with you?
I'm very easy. I mean, I'm on Twitter. I'm on Instagram. Just DM me. And also sharinian sessions@gmail.com. You know, I just have people send me your music. Let me hear what you're doing. I'm very approachable. And let me hear what you're doing. If I feel like I can help you, then we can work it out from there. But if I feel like I'm not a good fit or you don't need my keys on there, I'll tell you straight up too. You know, I have to like what I'm hearing and feel like I can help. But it's very gratifying for me, not only to play with the famous people and my heroes, but to help young artists that are coming up when they hear their music with the good keys on it, they're elated and they're over the moon about it. And it's a big deal for them to have me on it so they can post it and get new fans. And I always support these bands that I play on and post on my sites to give them exposure. Hopefully that some of my fans will go listen to them because a lot of my fans want to hear everything I'm playing on. So I want to keep them informed. It's a great thing. And I think now with the COVID and everything closed down and touring closed down, you're going to see musicians get very creative on ways how they're going to make money, whether they're doing TikTok or what's the other one that they do, the Cameo.
Yeah.
Or Cameo. Whatever it is that they're doing. You know, everyone has their own thing. To me, I feel the most comfortable doing keyboard sessions here at my house where there's major social distancing and I can record in the comfort of my home with my instruments and contribute to someone's music and send the files and do it that way. I love it.
Yeah.
And to be honest with you, at some point when I'm done touring, I could see myself doing that full time.
Oh, good stuff. I've seen other keyboard players taking the same approach recently, you know, after this COVID thing started. But enough bait from me. I won't ask you to comment on that.
No, I think you're funny. I think, listen, everyone has to survive during this time and reinvent themselves. I mean, here's the thing. Everyone can be high on the hog when they're in their band and it's kicking ass and they're selling lots of tickets and money's coming in. But when the shit hits the fan and everything is stopped and the money stops and you need to figure out, okay, what's the next way I'm going to make things happen? You have to be creative and you have to dig into your talents and be able to interact with the public, your potential fans or clients or whatever you want to call it. That's what it is. That's what it's coming to. And I think that there's going to be a lot of musicians who have the skill set that are going to be able to do that. And then there's going to be a lot of like journeyman type musicians that are jobbers that just collect a sideman check that it's going to be very hard for them to sell themselves online to the public because a lot of them don't have the names to pull it off.
Yeah, I have to agree. Well, Derek, that's the end for me. Thank you so much for the album and the interview. Stay safe and keep rocking, man.
All right, Rodrigo. Thank you for your time. Take care.
Thanks. Take care. Bye-bye. Bye.
Okay, everyone, thank you for listening to this interview with Derek Sherinian, and don't forget to check out his new album, The Phoenix. You can listen to this interview also on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and iHeartRadio. Also, please follow us on Twitter and Facebook and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Let's wrap it up with the song Empyrean Sky from Derek's new album, The Phoenix. Stay safe and see you next time.